Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Enjoy a tall, cool dude.
I grew up like most kids, worried I couldn't bench two plates, that I wouldn't fit in, that I wouldn't find love. Then I discovered partying, and suddenly all those worries went to the wayside. I didn't need love. I had keg stands. I discovered I was great at raging, and it revealed wonderful things about myself. I could relate to bros regardless of what kind of bro they were. I could be at a party and moon people, and everyone would laugh, you know, be witty. Or I could play beer pong and compete with real integrity. In short, I fulfilled my potential.
The Nightcap on WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Last nightcap of the week, but really, you're getting me 7 days a week this week, at least. Because I will be hosting Sports Talk Saturday tomorrow with my brother Lou DiBiase, and I'll be hosting pregame for the Buffalo Bills with Nate Geary on Sunday. So you'll get more of me if you want it. If not, well, you're in trouble. So, Mahomes injury, the Bills game, of course, there's a Jets offensive lineman, and also Cordy Glenn in Cincinnati, who are being pushed to return from injuries before they're ready. A lot of stuff going on in the NFL, a lot of stuff going on in football, fantasy football, of course. Throw me your fantasy questions. I want to do a little fantasy segment later in the show, so if you got anything, let me know, and we'll get to all of that. I do want to start tonight's show, though, with the Sabres. 803-0550 is the phone number, and last night, what is going to happen here? They won 3-0, and I felt significantly worse about their chances over the course of the entire season. And it doesn't really matter about their result. That's where I'm at with the Sabres. I talked about this a little bit with Brian Cozio yesterday. I am at a point where I am really mostly focused in on how they are playing versus if the puck is actually going in the back of the net, what the score is, what the standings are. And that might sound a little crazy to begin with because at the end of the year, of course, teams with the best wins and the most wins are going to make the playoffs. But I think I'm looking for indications that this team is better than last year. Because last year's team was even capable of putting a good streak together of some really close wins. And so far this year, they have a couple of those, but we're starting to get further and further away from them. The further and further we get from that Pittsburgh and New Jersey game to start the season, the harder it is to make the argument that they are different from last season. Take last night, for example. Los Angeles is not a good team. The Kings are not good. They're not. They are filled with veteran players on bad contracts that do not produce. Kovalchuk last night, how many times did he miss the net? He had a slap shot from closer in than maybe I've ever seen in the NHL. He had a slap shot from maybe 6 feet, and he blasted it wide of the net. Jeff Carter, not giving them a lot. Jonathan Quick can't even get on the ice anymore. Drew Doughty's not what he used to be. Really, Dustin Brown, not what he used to be. The only guy that I would say on that team is still as good as they used to be is Anze Kopitar. He's great. That's about it. And they don't have the cap space to get young players and get good players because of all their overpaid veterans. That's the cost of business. You want to be really good in the early 2000s? You want to sign all these guys to long contracts? Well, guess what? In 4 or 5 years, you're gonna be paying for it. And the Kings are paying for that right now. So not a great team at all. The Sabres were dominated by them for 40 minutes. Now, I thought there were stretches where it wasn't as bad. Like, you know, after the first onslaught that the Kings come out with in the third period, I thought the Sabres kind of were playing 50-50 hockey. It was pretty even. But the second period, they got outplayed. The third period overall, I thought they got outplayed. I mean, they're lucky that first couple minutes, they get those three goals on the board. They're lucky they got that cushion. They're also lucky in a way that Carter Hutton had a 47 save shutout. That guy was locked in last night, especially in the third. He was moving side to side quicker than I've ever seen him. Like, he was dialed in. That was as good as Carter Hutton gets. And he sets a franchise record for a shutout in the regular season. That's not sustainable. What we should be looking for is things that are sustainable. Now, there are some moments here and there. Last night, you got some. Mittelstadt. We've been looking to see if Mittelstadt can give you anything this season. Can he get you to 40 points? 35, 40 points. Can he even be that good? Because now I look at his stat line after last night. Hey, 5 points in 8 games? It's not too shabby. It's not too bad at all. Both goals that he scores were nice. That release on that shot. I've criticized Mittelstadt a lot for constantly fanning on pucks, which is a fact, by the way. Like, he fans on the puck all the time. And I think it's because of how short his stick is. But I'm not really, don't really know that. I think maybe it's the whippy stick. I don't know, though. Last night, VC puts it, tees it up for him right in the slot. That's a shot right there. That was a release. That was a goal scorer's goal. And I don't think we think about Mittelstadt as a pure goal scorer at all, even into what he could develop into. He's a playmaker. But he showed there, hey, I can shoot too. I can shoot. Then, perfect pass right on the tape, Connor Sherry, which I thought was a really sick goal. Like, how often do you see a guy on two knees score? You see guys on one knee a lot, like Stamkos does this a lot. He always goes down to one knee when he rips a one-timer. Sherry goes to two knees. That was pretty funny. It was pretty interesting. I don't think I've seen that a lot. So, and he's played great, by the way. He missed a couple of games, but he's a point a game for the season. He might even be over a point a game now. I don't know how many he ended up with last night. So Sherry looks nice. That's sustainable. Him giving you some secondary scoring. Mittelstadt, you'd like to think that that's sustainable. Giving you some secondary scoring. VC too. What's not sustainable is how they're winning. How they're playing as a team in the past week. They have, for they're kind of they are just disappearing for periods on end. You know, the last couple games, the West Coast trip so far with the Ducks and the Kings, it's been the second period, just disappeared completely. Haven't given you almost anything. The two home games last week, Florida and Montreal, it was the third period, run over. Those teams both erased Sabre leads, came back, brought it to overtime. Got a point off you. Division teams, division rivals. That's not sustainable. Now, I still want to think that that can be corrected. That Ralph Kruger is still, it's early. That they can look better than they've looked. And you know they can look better because they have done it a couple times. Like I said, it is harder to bring up that Pittsburgh-New Jersey opening start to the season because it's starting to get further and further away, but you still can. Like, those were legit games. Those were, at least Pittsburgh's a legit team. New Jersey looks like trash, to be honest. They look terrible. We're talking about trading Taylor Hall already. It's 2 weeks into the season. So, they deserve credit for those games. But they need to start putting more performances like that on the board. Because I'm not so sure that they can do this all year. We have an example from last year that they couldn't do it all year. They couldn't get the goaltending all season like that. They couldn't get the power play production all season. They couldn't keep winning overtime and shootout games. Because that's a tight margin of error. I think you want to be better puck possession-wise. I would trade all of that in for them to be a better puck possession team, for them to get back to where they were shot attempt-wise earlier in the year, comparably, like, you know, eight games stretch here. But I do want to leave the door open for this working all season. I think, inherently, I want to think about it this way, and everybody wants to think about it this way, that because last year they weren't able to keep what they were doing going, that's suddenly not possible. Because that's not true. Teams can be lucky over the course of an entire season. Usually, the way that happens is, well, you look at, like, PDO is the stat you want to look for that. That's a combination of shot percentage and save percentage. Save percentage is the big part. you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Carter Hutton and Linus Ullmark can get the Sabres to the playoffs with goaltending. It happens. Goalies that, for the most part, are not usually capable of putting up top 10, top 5 type seasons in the league, do it once in a while. Colorado a few years back with Semyon Varlamov. Varlamov had that 1 year where he was a Vezina candidate, and Colorado was not a good team that year. A young McKinnon. They still had Duchesne and O'Reilly. O'Reilly was playing the wing then. They didn't have much on D. It was just Tyson Barry. And Varlamov was so good that it got them to the playoffs. Is Varlamov a great goalie? I wouldn't say that. Last year with the New York Islanders, Robin Lehner, who was, to me, very underrated in Buffalo, but no Vezina candidate. He goes into Long Island. Thomas Greiss, too. They both have career seasons. The goaltending helps the Islanders, maybe was the biggest reason they get to the playoffs. Is Robin Lehner a consistent Vezina candidate? Is Thomas Greiss that? No. But it happened once. And I want to leave the door open for the Sabres getting goaltending like this over the course of the season, and also their power play scoring at a clip that will be near the top of the league. If you can get those two things to happen, and there could be some other combination of luck that can get you there, but if you could just get the goaltending to be better than it was last year, similar to maybe what Varlamov did in Colorado a few years back, or what Yaroslav Halak did once upon a time in Montreal, or what Lehner did last year with the Islanders. You can get that from Hutton and Ullmark. And you can get that power play to be near the top of the league. That might be enough to make the playoffs. That could be a recipe that gets it done. Even in this division, with how tough it is. You could squeak in a wild card spot, I think, with that. But, again, I'm wanting more earlier in the year. I don't want them to have to make it that way. But that's how they've won these past couple games. The way I want to see them win is the way they did it in Pittsburgh to open the season. Just dominate the puck. Don't let them have it. Passes out of your own end. Skillful plays. Speed up the ice. Constant cycling in the offensive end. All of it. Shot attempts. Quality scoring chances. From the slot, right in front of the net. That's the stuff you want to see on a more consistent basis. And the way they've done it the past couple games, they're starting to remind me of the team that won 10 games in a row. And the team that won 10 games in a row played well in that stretch, but got a lot of luck along the way. It was a little fluky. And we saw that it was a little fluky because they collapsed like we've never seen afterwards. At least collapse from what they had been. We've seen them be that bad, but we hadn't seen them go from first to 27th, whatever they ended up like that. So, I want more out of this team. They won 3-0 last night, but I want more out of this team. I think they need more than what they did in LA last night. Because you are not always going to get your goaltender to play that much better than the other team's goalie. Jack Campbell starts for the Kings. I mean, he's okay, but he's not a starting goalie in the league at all. Guy was waived last year or 2 years ago by Dallas. Former first-round pick. Former first-round pick. Usually you have every reason to give that guy as many chances as possible. Still got waived. Ends up in the AHL for a little bit. Then ends up as the Kings' backup. Jonathan Quick is just terrible at this point in his career. And he gets an opportunity to start. Not nearly as good as Hutton was last night. So what happens when they have to play San Jose these next couple games? That's what I wonder. And I wonder if Hutton is the goalie, or is a goalie, Ullmark too, that could have one season like that. Because you know, I know he's not going to be a franchise goaltender or anything like that. But can he have that Lehner season from last year? Can he have that Varlamov season? Could he have that Yaroslav Halak season? Pekka Rinne's had a couple of them, although he's been more consistent than those other guys. I just don't want that to be the sole reason the Sabres end up making it. Because there are... were other players at the beginning of the year that made you think, all right, this thing could work. They could actually be legitimately good. Olofsson is doing that right now. He really is. Johansson is doing that. I think you just needed a couple other guys to really get all the way there. And maybe last night, even though the guys who had been producing didn't, the guys that did last night in Sherry, Mittelstadt, and VC, maybe that's a little glimmer of hope. That if those guys can start to give you something, and maybe everyone else has had a bad game, well, now maybe I do have a combination of players that not only can be good enough to squeak in, but can really earn it and really look like a playoff team beginning to end. Because that's what we should want. We haven't had that in such a long time. Even the two teams that made the playoffs in the early 2000s, won the division in 2010, lost to the Bruins, seventh seed in 2011. Even those teams, like, I don't want to be that team. I'd take it. Don't get me wrong. I would take being the 2011 Sabres right now, getting in as a seventh seed, being competitive in the first round, but never really thinking, hey, this team could win a Stanley Cup. Sign me up today for that. But I still want to think they have the potential to be more than that. Someday, they have to be more than that. This team is not built to be that team long-term. Who's on that team in 2011? Roy is still here. Connolly, Stafford, Vanek, Pominville. Tyler Myers is your best defenseman. Miller, your best player, is your goaltender. You know, that core of players. The whole reason they rebuilt in the first place, it took five times as long as we wanted, but the whole reason they rebuilt in the first place was to be better than that. Was to be more consistent year to year to that. To be more respected as an actual contender than that team. Like, those two teams made the playoffs those 2 years, but did anybody ever think that those teams could win a Stanley Cup around the league here? No. And when you have high-end talent like the Sabres have right now with Dahlin and Eichel, and even throw Reinhardt into that, the bar should be higher at some point. And I don't want to just assume because they haven't reached even that 2011 bar, if you know what I mean here, that I can't think about the higher bar, because that's still the ultimate goal. That's still got to be that ultimate goal. I think that's gotten away from us. That's gotten away from me, for sure. I have to remind myself of it a lot. Why did they rebuild? Why did they tank in the first place? Because making the playoffs as an 8 seed was not good enough. It wasn't. And what I'm here to say is I think the way this team has played the last week and a half, they're only good enough to be an 8 seed. And maybe this year's not the year to expect more than that, but sometime soon, they're going to have to do that. You can't not ever reach that goal with those two players. It would be, if you fast forwarded 10 years and told me they never were a serious cup contender, I'd be dumbfounded. How can you possibly manage that? You have the hardest things figured out, and you did as good a job as you could with it. For decades, you're starving for a franchise center. You're starving for a franchise Norris caliber defenseman. They have it. They have it. How can you not figure out the rest? I don't want to sound so negative. They won 3-0 last night. The goalie set a franchise record. He was amazing. They're first place in the NHL. But I don't know. I just want them to be better than an 8-seed type of team. And I'm thinking more about how they're playing than the results. And I think how they've been playing the last week hasn't been good enough. Flat out. Even though they've been winning the games. It's a weird thing to say, but I'm going to go with it. 803-0550 is the phone number. How confident are you in this team right now? 6-1-1. They are first place in the NHL. The good news is they're putting points in the bank. So, that's good. Remember even last year, I'm going to take a time out a second here. Last year, once they went through that 10-game win streak, you know, no one was really saying they're going to maintain that all year, right? Like, we all knew they'd regress a little bit. But it was just, at that point, you get to December, it's like, just give me 500 hockey the rest of the way. Just give me 500 hockey and I'm in the playoffs. And 500 hockey is not that good. It's okay. It's not that good, though. And the good news is, because of their start, we're getting closer and closer to that same thing. We're getting closer and closer to saying, hey, just give me 500 hockey the rest of the way. I don't know what they'd have to be there. Maybe they have to do the same thing. They'd have to be top five in the league by December. It's a lot to ask, but they're doing a great job at it so far, at least with their results. 803-0550 is the phone number. Give me a call. We'll switch to football a little bit later on, but a little bit of hockey talk here to start off the show. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. The ALCS, by the way, I'll give you an update on that. Game 5 between the Yankees and Astros. This game's in New York. I don't think I knew they went 2-3-2 in baseball, but okay. That looks like a home run for the Yankees, and it is 1-1. Bottom of the first. Aaron Judge on first, Yankees and Astros tied at 1. Houston leads the series 3-1. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. He'll be back after this on WGR.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For the goal line up top, Miller. Fanned on it. We're still in. Feeds it in front. It's tapped in. They score. 3-0 lead for the Sabres is Casey Mittelstadt parked in front of the net. The benefactor of what was a fan shot attempt at first. And there's your power play.
That is Dan Dunleavy on the call. Oh, what happened there? Dan Dunleavy. Casey Mittelstadt scores to make it 3-0 yesterday in the Sabres game. He scores 2 goals, adds an assist, primary assist in that. Great game for him, his best game of the season. That play, by the way, that highlight was just of, that was Ristolainen's best pass of his career. I mean, maybe that was an example of how far Ristolainen has come. I don't think he's come all the way, because I think he is starting to revert back to some of his instincts. But he never made that pass. He never, ever made that pass. Ristolainen gets the puck like that every other year of his career. Like 10 feet from the net. There's a guy there, but you have the shot lane. He is blasting that puck. But instead, he had the foresight to see that Mittelstadt was coming from the side of the net to the front, to the back door, where the goalie could not get to it. And all it would take is either a lucky bounce or Mittelstadt beating his man to the puck. And the latter happened. Mittelstadt beat Alec Martinez to the puck, Ristolainen put it right where he needed to. He had the idea to even make that pass. And I just think that's a play he doesn't make before this year. At least for the most part. 9 times out of 10 he doesn't. So great foresight from him, and maybe that's a sign of Ristolainen at least trying to think differently. Like I said, the past couple games, he's starting to show us why he can't play 25 minutes a night. But you're still seeing some signs that that things are different with him. Not all the way different, but maybe a little bit. So I thought a good game from him last night, at least in the offensive end. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll get into Bills and Dolphins in a little bit. We're doing some hockey here to start off the show. Let's go to Jason. Jason, you're on the Nightcap. What's up?
Thanks for taking the call, Joe.
Sure.
I noticed something. I've noticed that you're going to start doing the Locked On Sabres, and I'm a huge fan of hockey. I've been watching since
yep.
I was a kid. I struggle fundamentally with it, though. I know a really good deal about football, but I struggle with fundamentals, plays, and different things like that. So I wanted to get your take on this.
Sure.
The other night when they were struggling, I can't remember, were they playing not the Panthers, the team after that?
After the Panthers? So Anaheim?
We lost. Anaheim, yes.
Yeah.
So we were playing Anaheim, and I noticed that it seems like when the Sabres get down low, they try to get really desperate, and they revert to their issues from last year. The one thing I really noticed is they like to try and create more than there is, and they hold onto the puck a lot more. I noticed with Dahlin, if there's one guy you'd want, it's probably Eichel, but I noticed he does it as well, Skinner, and they hold on and they ruin opportunities that we have to set up any plays, and then they kind of just fold. And it reminds me a lot of last year. Do you have the same take on that? Or?
Are you talking in the defensive end?
Yes, in the defensive end. And then even rushing into the zone, I feel like there's passes they can make, and they're just not making the passes. They're trying to do too much.
Okay, I kind of see that. I think that it's not nearly as bad as it was last season. Like, I don't disagree with you. Dahlin, Eichel, Skinner. What I would say is I think the guys that are doing that, though, are, I don't want to say they're above everybody else. Like, they deserve to be able to have that right to try to create like that. I do think they're doing it too much. Eichel had a play yesterday, actually, where he kind of got himself trapped in the corner, and then he turned it over. And there was a guy right there was a guy on the other side, Yoki Haru, I think, who was just wide open. Just, like, make that simple pass, and then he can get it out. So I do think they're still kind of learning in that area of spacing and when to get the puck off their stick, because I think they just didn't have that last year. Like, that was never coached to them, I think. Because it looks so much different. It looks like that they're being taught differently. So I do see what you're seeing. I think that it's not a big issue for me. Your skilled guys, I'm going to want to give them more leeway than the others. And Dahlin has struggled with that, I think, more than anybody this year. But the guy's going to be a superstar. He's already amazing. He's got 8 points in 8 games, I think. 9 points in 8 games? I think it's 9 points in 8 games. So, he's playing great. And there's another level there, maybe. And I don't think he may... It's tougher for him to get to that level if you don't let him just play his game. So, I just let them go the way they're going at this point. 803-0550 is the phone number. Let's go to Pat. Pat in Toronto. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think this team has a lot of potential. It's showing that it does, but hopefully that when the crunch time comes, that they can play a different style, and you could see that the last
year, different style. How?
Saying a little bit more grit, and hopefully they'll find their way. And I think they can. They have if they use these snipers like Olsson and Skinner and even Sherry in a proper way, they still got to get in there. When it's crunch time, just like the other night, they struggled in that type of game, and maybe there was a little bit of faultiness in the referees calling it and letting it go that way, but that's the way it's going to be called in the playoffs. So you're going to have to learn to play a little bit more gritty, and you have that scoring touch finesse that they have, right? So
I don't know, man. Like, I get what you're saying. I understand that people want that. I disagree. Like, I really do. I just think that those kinds of players are the ones that get you in trouble. Their grittiest players right now, on the blue line, for example, are Ristolainen and McCabe. And so far, they've been their worst pair. They don't have the puck. They never have the puck. They have the least amount of scoring opportunities. And, yeah, they look gritty, and they throw a lot of hits, and they're tough to play against in their own end, but that's the problem. The inherent problem is they're in their own end. When they're hitting guys and they're finishing checks, my problem is you have to check the guy because you don't have the puck. I think that's a way of thinking that has come a long way in the NHL, and I think the Sabres are just starting to catch up to that. So, yes, in the playoffs when things are called differently, I do agree with you. I think they could get pushed around a little bit. Could happen, for sure. But I think at the end of the day, the more skilled team is going to win. That's going to be the bigger determining factor to who wins. Think about this. Milan, this is a long time ago. I don't know why I keep going back to 2011 today, or 2012, like that team, but it keeps popping up in my head. They were not a great team. But they had skill up front with Vanek and Pominville and Roy and Connolly. Like, they didn't have the high-end talent, but they had some skilled players. They had some skill. And then Milan Lucic runs over Ryan Miller. And what did everybody say about them? And it was fair criticism, but what did everybody say about them? That they could get pushed around, and not just that moment, like that it was embarrassing, but what was said about the team? That they could get pushed around, because we saw that happen. They weren't tough enough. They got bullied by Boston. And that was all true. But then what did the Sabres do to react to it? They went out, and Darcy Regier thought it was important to sign John Scott. He thought it was important to trade for Steve Ott. He thought it was important to remake the team to be more gritty. Now, that was a little bit different, I know, because they did not have the high-end talent even that this team now has. But what you saw was, when they built their team to basically fight the Bruins instead of beat the Bruins, that was the beginning of the end. That was the beginning of this long era of suffering. And I'm not blaming it all on the grit part of it, but that's where it all started. Lucic running Miller and everybody thinking the Sabres needed to get tougher. That was the beginning of them being terrible for years and years. The counter argument to that, that anyone could make right now, and I completely understand this, is, well, now you have the talented guys and you still suck. At least they have. Not this year. Not yet. So I get that too. But I still think that even though it hasn't worked with Eichel and so far with Dahlin and Reinhardt and this current core of players, that's what you need to do. You have to continue along this path. Their forward group was skilled, but their defense core wasn't. Their defense core was still that gritty, tough defense core. Bogosian and Scandella and Ristolainen, and I know all three of those guys are still here, and Georges, but now it looks different. And at least they're trying to be like teams that are winning now and not building yourselves up to not get pushed around. 803-0550 is the phone number. Let's go to Jonathan and Alden. Jonathan, you're on the Nightcap. What's up? Jonathan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here now.
Yep, go ahead.
I'm looking at both the Bills and the Sabres, how this is their best respective start since 2008 and 2011. And we all know that both those years the fell apart and missed the playoffs. However, with the Sabres, I know this is what they're doing right now is not sustainable, and I think they're going to hit a slump at some point. But I'm hoping that this will be like the 08-09 season or the 11-12 season where they play average hockey the rest of the way, and if they fall short of the playoffs, I'll be happy if they're just a little bit short. But I'm not sure the Sabres are ready to make that big move to get into the playoffs, to make a big push in the playoffs. Now the Bills, I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes' injury and how weak the AFC is, how Brady's possibly regressing. The Bills, I might want to see put their chips in the middle. The Sabres, we'll see how long they can keep it up, but I'm not sure they're quite there yet. We'll see what kind of move they make in March, but I was kind of expecting an average season from here on out.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Thanks for the call, Jonathan. We'll get into Mahomes and the Bills in a little bit, because I do think that's really important in the AFC right now. But, yeah, I get your logic. Like, average hockey the rest of the way, you're close to a playoff seed, but you don't quite make it. Like, that is a step in the right direction. That's honestly a big step in the right direction. If they ended up with 91 points this year and missed the playoffs, that's a massive step. Only 1 year have they even been close to that number. Bielsma, the one season with 82. I think that was the number, 82. Otherwise, they've been in the 70s, 60s, and what was the tank year, 50s? So, I don't want to go all the way to saying I would sign up for that, but I wouldn't be disappointed. I wouldn't sign up for it, I'll tell you that. No, definitely not. I wouldn't sign up for anything less than the playoffs. Give me the 8th seed at least. But as I said, we're not looking to fire anybody if they get 91 points and miss the playoffs. That's a good number. That's a good number. But with this start, and as I said earlier, just because we forgot about that high bar that has been set because of the path they took to tank, doesn't mean it doesn't still exist. It's hiding right now. We got to get back to that. And maybe this is the year you break through that and you start to uncover it a little bit and we start to remember, oh yeah, that's why we tanked. Because we're sick of being the 8 seed. We're sick of being a giant underdog to the 1 seed and not no one even respecting us at all as a Stanley Cup contender. You don't want to be a playoff contender. You want to be a championship contender. The Bills. We'll go through the same thing with this for the Bills at some point, too. They're probably going to make the playoffs this year. And then, a conversation that I've never had in my entire life will be, all right, now what? Now how do you make that next jump to going from playoff contender to Super Bowl contender? And the Bills look like they're on a path to have that conversation. The Sabres, I am still very much questioning it. And last night, even though they won 3-0, the way they got run over by a bad hockey team for 40 minutes worries me a bit, for sure. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. I got an interesting food take. It's not even a food take. It's a food thing that I thought was a thing. It was just common knowledge. But maybe I'm the only one. I'm going to ask people on Twitter right now what that is, and I'm going to see if the listeners have an idea of what I'm talking about, or if I'm just a crazy person. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR. Welcome back to the Nightcap. Yankee fans are going to be happy, although I would assume Yankee fans are not listening to me right now. They are watching this game. Maybe you're watching the game while listening to me. I've done that. Is that a move? That's a move I make. I'm a big Dan Le Batard Show fan from ESPN Radio. I'm a big Puck Soup podcast listener. A bunch of podcasts, different Puck. That's Greg Wyshynski, by the way, that does that for Puck Soup. Also Ryan Lambert. Don't really listen to myself. Yeah, you never. You just can't do it. It's like, I don't know. Sometimes you can't listen to yourself, the sound of your own voice. Like, not that I don't like the sound of my own voice. It's just. Sometimes you can't listen to it. Like, I already listened to this. I'm doing it now. I'm already digesting it. But I will definitely have a game on. Not baseball, because I'm not a huge baseball fan. Although I'm starting to watch it a little bit more. In fact, I did do this actually with... what game was it? Was it... Nationals and Dodgers, maybe? Game 3? Game 2? I don't remember. It was what game in that series. I got that game on. I turned the sound off, and I'm throwing a podcast on, or I'm throwing a radio show on, or I'm throwing music on. Depends on what it is. A Sabre game, I'm not doing that. A Bills game, I'm certainly not doing that. Like a Liverpool soccer game, I'm not doing that. But, you know, a bad Thursday night football game, maybe. A bad Monday night game. Just like, you don't get the whole show. You don't get all my attention. A sporting event that's good enough to be on, but not good enough to have my undivided attention. So maybe you're watching this right now and you're thinking that. Anyways, that was all to say that the Yankees are up 4-1. Home run in the second inning, a 3-run shot. It's top of the second right now. It's a good game so far. It is 4-1 Yankees, top of the second. The Astros have two outs, but they've met on first and second. So a good game so far. You can check that out if you're looking for a... live play-by-play of that over on our sister station, ESPN 1520. A very important poll I just put up on Twitter. I need to be right on this. You out there will never know how right I need to be on this and how much I need this poll to come back significantly in one direction. Are you aware that apples taste better outside? Think about that for a second. I'm not even talking, hey, the atmosphere and the crisp fall weather and like it makes it taste better. No. I am saying that there is a legitimate difference in taste from being indoors to outdoors. Maybe, like I said, maybe I am a crazy person, but I thought this was a thing. I thought there was some sort of science behind it. I could not tell you what it is, like oxidation or the way like the fresh air hits. I have no idea. I couldn't even begin to give you an argument like that. But I thought that it was a thing, that apples taste different or better, a lot better, outside than they do inside. Am I wrong on this? So far, on this poll that I put up on Twitter, which, like I said, you'll never know how important this poll is. It's only 56% yes, and I'm worried about that. That's not enough for me. I need that number to be like 85, because I think I'm a crazy person if it's not. Because I'm not even sure how many of the 56%... understand what I'm saying. I'm wondering if they might just be like, oh yeah, you know, fall weather. I like to. No. I'm saying apples taste better outside. Legitimately, it's different. Maybe I'm nuts. That's probably more than 56% likely. I don't know. I'll continue to keep you updated on Yankees and Astros. I will greatly appreciate it if you vote on my poll on Twitter, my incredibly silly poll on Twitter, and we'll talk Bills. In the next hour, Bills, Dolphins, the line's up to 17 points. I'll be on Sports Talk Saturday talking plenty about it with my brother Lou DiBiase tomorrow, and then, of course, with Nate Geary for Bills pregame Sunday morning. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you got any thoughts on the game, we'll get into that next. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
Enjoy a tall, cool dude.
What is this? What are we doing? What in God's name are we doing? Look, our lives. What kind of lives are these? We're like children. We're not men.
No, we're not. We're not men.
It's the Nightcap.
Are we going to be sitting here when we're 60 like two idiots?
We should be having dinner with our sons when we're 60.
We're pathetic. You know that?
Yeah, like I don't know that I'm pathetic.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
So then you asked yourselves, isn't there something more to life?
Yes!
Yeah, well, let me clue you in on something.
There isn't.
Welcome back to The Nightcap with Joe DiBiase on WGR. Still 4-1 in the ALCS. Game 5. 3-1 Astros in the series. 4-1 Yankees in the game. ESPN 1520 if you're looking for that. Bills and Dolphins on Sunday. The Bills are a 17-point favorite. The biggest they've been in my lifetime. I was born in 95, for anyone wondering. By the way, quick update on the Apple poll, which I'm very disappointed in the results of so far. But not completely. It's not a disaster. Are you aware that apples taste better outside? A couple hundred votes in, 53% say yes. It needs to be a higher number, guys. I'm telling you. That needs to be a higher number. It went down 3% during the break. So somebody went up. A whole slew of people went out there and just screw me up. I'm trying to win an argument here with somebody. But whatever. 803-0550 is the phone number. Let's transition into football. What better way to do that with our interview of the day? We really should call it the interview of the week because, to me, I learn more from this guy than any other guest we have, football-wise at least. Greg Cosell, NFL Films and ESPN matchup. Here he is for his regular visit with One Bills Live. It was John Murphy and Chris Brown today. So here's Cosell with the guys.
Longtime senior producer for NFL Films, Greg Cosell. Hello, Greg. Say hello to Chris Brown. It's me and Chris Brown here today.
Murph, Chris, how are you?
We're doing great. Well. Thanks for joining us. Hey, Chris and I were talking about this Bills-Dolphins game, and as Chris has said a couple of times, it's a tough sell. I mean, it's hard to convince people. It is. It's hard to convince people that the Dolphins should be taken seriously. I mentioned to Chris, it's been a long time since I've seen an NFL team so devoid of talent as this year's Dolphins appear to be. What do you think?
In all honesty, I had to look at some of their players and see who they were.
Yeah.
And that's very rare, Murph, with me, and I'm being totally honest, because I watch college players. I evaluate 250 college players every year after the season. I'm very familiar with who plays in the NFL. And I had to truly look up a number of their players to see who they were playing.
And now we know that Rashad Jones is out, one of the few recognizable players. Xavien Howard is a question mark for Sunday. I mean, that's a thin secondary, and I'm not saying Josh Allen is going to light them up and have the first 300-yard passing game for this franchise in about 40 games, but that certainly does not bode well for a competitive game by any stretch of the imagination, does it?
No, but I will say this, and I think you guys will understand this. You know, look, we've talked about the Bills' offense. We've talked about Josh Allen, and for the most part, I think Josh has played well, and I think that he's improving incrementally. Obviously, the Patriot game was not a good game, but I think for the most part that there's been improvement. But I also think it is an offense that is not necessarily a lighted-up offense. You know, it's not the kind of game where you just go into it now on a Friday saying, hey, they're going to win this game 35-10, no problem. And when games are close, you know, you always have to be a little careful. So I would expect that their defense would have a chance to dominate in this game. But I still, you know, you just hope that you're not in the fourth quarter, Murph, and you know this. You've seen too many of these games in your years in Buffalo where all of a sudden in the fourth quarter it's 13-10 and you're in a nail biter where one play changes the whole game.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, and you've seen this Buffalo offense over the first five games this season, and I mentioned this to Chris and to Steve earlier this week. My sense is with the players that they have a chance to get back in the lineup this week, including Devin Singletary, including Tyler Croft, and might be his first game as a Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
I don't know if we really have a good sense yet of the identity of this Buffalo offense. Things could change if these guys, potential contributors, come in and do their thing, right?
I mean, look, I always liked Tyler Croft. I remember when he came out of Rutgers, I thought he was a very athletic tight end, went to Cincinnati, has faced injuries throughout his career, but I think that ability-wise, he gives you some dimensions as a receiving tight end. No question, you know, they'd like him to become a factor in what they do. I think they'd like to run the ball. I think they'd like Josh Allen to probably be more settled as a pocket player and only move as a parachute as opposed to let's make scrambling a part of his game. Obviously, there will be design runs depending on field position, field location, down and distance. But I think when all said and done, you'd like to keep working toward Josh being an efficient, effective pocket quarterback.
So, Greg, with Devin Singletary looking like he's going to be back in the lineup this week, I mean, I think we all know Frank Gore is largely a between-the-tackles type runner. How does Singletary getting back into the fold here kind of diversify their running game, if you will, based on what you may have seen from him the first 2 weeks of the season before he got hurt?
Well, Chris, I think what you look at is the kind of runs they did with him. The runs they did with Singletary were outside runs, which you're not really going to do with Gore, because they pulled the center and the guard, or both right. guards. They got him on the perimeter, on the edge, and I think that's what they'd ultimately like to do. You get what we call pin-pull concepts, where you pull linemen and then have your receivers block down inside, and they pin inside. So I think those were the runs that were effective with Singletary. We saw that in the preseason. We saw that on runs before he got hurt. So he gives them a perimeter dimension and some speed on the edge, which every team wants to have.
Hey Greg, there was a great stat put together by your folks at NFL Matchup about kind of go-to receivers, and it showed that Cole Beasley has an 18% reception rate and passes aimed, from Josh Allen in his direction. That tells us that Josh has a comfort level already built up with Cole Beasley, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think if I remember correctly, the last game, you know, those kinds of throws are critical, because those are the chain movers, Murph. You know, obviously Cole Beasley is not a vertical player. He's not going to average 16, 17 yards a reception. What you're counting on with Cole Beasley, for the most part, if it's second and long or third and six, is that he works inside with pivot routes, with option routes, and that Josh Allen delivers the ball. You know, the key thing is when it's third and six, if Cole Beasley catches a pass and it's for 8 yards, that's a good play. Yep. And those are the kinds of throws that we want to see Josh Allen make more of. And that's why Cole Beasley was brought in. There's no mystery to what Cole Beasley is. That's the kind of receiver he is.
And flipping it around kind of to the other side of the ball for the Bills here, Greg, I mean, another stat that you guys had brought up, and I think it's been documented before just because they've had so much success, is the defense getting off the field after just three plays. I mean, they have the second highest three and out percentage in the league. Going against this offense of Miami, it figures to get even better at playing at home, right?
You would certainly think so, Chris. I mean, this Miami offense, the offensive line is kind of in a work in progress throughout the season, different guys playing different positions. They really haven't developed any kind of consistent pass game at all. So you would think that this Buffalo defense, which I really enjoy watching, they're so fundamentally sound, they're execution efficient, they don't make mistakes. You would think that this defense would be in a good position to play well on Sunday and really not give Miami many chances to score.
We're with Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer, NFL Films. So the Dolphins make the move to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Bills know him pretty well. Bills fans certainly do. What do you think Miami expects to get from Fitzpatrick that maybe they didn't get in the first two games this year?
You know what? Your guess would be as good as mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you know, you know me well enough to know that I don't rip coaches. I never do that because I know how hard they work, and they're watching tape and they're doing what's best for their team. But it was a week ago that they announced that Josh Rosen would be the starter for the rest of the season. And then this week they obviously took Rosen out and put Fitzpatrick in and now named him the starter for Sunday. So I'm not sure what they're thinking, and I'm just being totally honest. You know, so look, they're probably looking at him as a veteran quarterback playing against a defense that is really difficult to play against, and that a veteran would have a better chance to execute their game plan against this style of defense than Josh Rosen. That would be my guess.
And then, I mean, as if they didn't have enough to deal with, you know, we see the news about Kenyon Drake and how he's on the trade block and how he wouldn't mind a change of scenery. He's probably not alone in that locker room and thinking that way. So how do you, as Brian Flores, as a head coach, how do you kind of keep this train on the track with all of this ancillary stuff going on?
Oh, that you know what? That's way beyond my simple mind, Chris. My investment portfolio is not big enough to have to answer that question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, it's a tough deal. They're not a very talented team. They have a lot of injuries. Obviously, they did play a competitive game against Washington and lost. But I don't know. I don't know how you do that. You just look, we know coaches. You guys know coaches. Coaches don't think like that. They just come in and they grind and they work and they put together a plan and they believe that plan will be effective against the given opponent. That's all you can do.
Hey, Greg, let's get you to some of the other issues, some of the games going on in the NFL. And Pat Mahomes, we find out just moments ago, he's going to miss some time. The MRI showed no real significant damage to his kneecap. But I heard it's that you were indicating, I think on Ross Tucker's podcast perhaps, that with his earlier injury, Mahomes had not really been himself even before he got hurt last night, huh? What did you see?
Well, I can't speak to how his previous injury affected his play. I can only tell you what the tape showed. And the last three games, teams had played high percentage man-to-man against the Chiefs. And the Chiefs had struggled a bit. Because when you play man, you're challenging an offense. You're challenging receivers to win and to run precise routes to create separation. You're challenging the quarterback to throw on time into tight windows with precise ball placement. Over the last three games, Mahomes had not done that. Mahomes had been very loose and a bit undisciplined with his mechanics. And I know there were a lot of people when he came out of Texas Tech that were concerned a bit about that, that he was that style player. He also missed some wide open receivers. There were other times he didn't turn it loose to open receivers. So Mahomes had not played particularly well. You know, we don't know how it would have played out. Look, he's a very, very talented thrower. That is inarguable. But he had not played particularly well for the reasons I just suggested.
He's human.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's the one thing that has now become such a big issue when you evaluate quarterbacks, and we see it with Josh Allen as well, is the balance between playing with precision from the pocket within structure versus the ability to be a little looser and play outside of the structure. And there's a balance there. And the quarterbacks that can do it, my guess is you don't want to take that away from them, but you don't want that to be the foundation of their game. So there's a strong balance there. You know, when Pat Mahomes makes great throws falling away or stepping into the bucket when he doesn't need to, do you say to Patrick Mahomes, hey, that's not good, we have to be better? Or do you say, great throw? I'm not a coach. I don't know the answer to that.
And while Mahomes goes out of the lineup for the Chiefs, it looks like Saquon Barkley's moving into the lineup for the Giants this week, has the green light. And we haven't seen much of him with Daniel Jones together in the lineup. So how does that – I mean, obviously it's going to make life easier for Daniel Jones, I would think, because we would expect, what, more eight in the box, right, Greg?
Well, I think you get that anyway. And, you know, again – you know, the big myth is that you can't run against eight in the box. Obviously, good running teams always run against eight in the box because that's what teams play. And teams by formation know they're going to get eight in the box by personnel and formation. So that's one of those sort of gospel myths about the NFL that holds no truth whatsoever. But the Giants are going to try to run the ball. And they'll use Barkley, I believe, in the pass game as well, both offset in the backfield and detached from the formation. He's an outstanding receiver, and they'll make him a focus of what they do. Now, Engram is back as well, and Engram is a very intriguing player because of how he can be used.
Greg Cosell is on the line with us from ESPN's NFL matchup. Greg, another game that is interesting, I think. It's the Colts, who would like to make a run at the Houston Texans in that division, but Deshaun Watson's playing at virtually an MVP level right now, isn't he?
Yeah, and I like Deshaun Watson, but I think one thing that's been overlooked, Murph, because, you know, Deshaun, from the time he came in the league, he was a big name, deservedly so, is this team's running the ball very well. And first of all, they run the ball on first down at a high percentage. People might not be aware of that. Carlos Hyde, because he's been discarded from a number of teams and no one thinks about him, has actually been a really important part of what they do. Now, Watson certainly is a very good player. He's only going to get better, obviously, as he gains more experience as well. And you know, he's a good thrower. He can move. Their O-line has gotten significantly better, which I knew it would. They're playing with three first-round picks. One of them got hurt, but he'll be back. And I have to tell you, watching them last week against the Chiefs, Laremy Tunsil, he was dominant. He looked like the absolute prototypical left tackle.
And then, you know, going from a quarterback that's, you know, taking off, let's go to two that might be done. The top two picks in the 2015 draft, I mean, Mariota and Winston. Oh. And the irony of this for me, Greg, and I don't know how you feel about this, but you have one guy in Jameis Winston who cannot avoid mistakes and hasn't been able to his entire career. And in my opinion, you got a guy like Mariota who, if anything, has been too conservative through the course of his career. I don't know how you feel, but these guys might be at the end of their rope here as far as their NFL starting careers go.
Maybe not Winston as much as Mariota, because I think Arians will still look at Winston as a talented player who he can fix. Mariota has had a number of issues throughout his career, and he's had moments, of course. He was a number two pick in a draft, but he's a little difficult to watch at times. His mechanics have been poor, lower body mechanics. I've always been a little poor. I always sense watching him, Chris, that he doesn't have an innate understanding of what would be viewed as open in the NFL, and therefore he leaves a lot of throws on the field by not turning it loose, which leads to sacks, which automatically gets assigned to the offensive line when they're not all the offensive line's fault. He's certainly not a turn-it-loose thrower, and his accuracy and ball placement has been very erratic and inconsistent.
Greg, here's an interesting game late Sunday. The Ravens at Seattle. You guys probably deal with that on the NFL matchup show.
And yeah, I did, in fact, I dealt with it. Murph, you're 100% right.
Good guess by me. Tell me what you said in your analysis of the course of action for the Ravens with the quarterback. And should they let him run that much, do you think? And should they do it this week against Seattle?
Well, I think their offense, the foundation of it is the run game, with Lamar Jackson being a significant part of that. They're a pistol formation-based offense. They like to run a lot of base plays from different formations and different looks. They just get to base plays differently. Jackson's a meaningful part of that. At this point in his career, he's a better runner than he is a thrower. The Seahawks will do what they've been doing all year. They're line up in their base defense. They're anathema to the rest of the league. The Seahawks play in their base defense about 70% of the snaps. No one does that. It's more than twice any other team in the league, and they'll line up with a 6-1 front, six across, and the one stacked linebacker, Bobby Wagner. And they'll try to keep Jackson from getting outside and outflank their defense.
Yeah, tell me your thoughts on the job that Greg Roman has done with Lamar Jackson and that Ravens offense. I think he did a good job here in Buffalo with less than optimal conditions, and it seems like he's kind of hit a stride now with that team in Baltimore.
Well, I think he's playing to what his quarterback is. Yeah. Don't forget, he was the OC in San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick. So you understand the strengths of your quarterback and the limitations of your quarterback. So you play to the strengths, which involves them in the run game. And ideally, what that does is it creates some hesitation, indecision, and confusion for certain defenders who are in conflict. And it creates and defines easier throws by NFL standards. That's what you're trying to do with quarterbacks who are not great throwers, like Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson.
And another matchup that I know Bills fans will have a secondary eye on is the Monday night game between their two division rivals, the Jets and the Patriots. Everybody's gaga after Darnold's big game against Dallas in his return from mono. But he's going against the number one defense in football that has put a stranglehold on just about every quarterback they face this year. Should we expect Darnold to maybe take a step back from what we saw him do against Dallas last week?
You know, Chris, you know what's amazing to me? You know, I don't spend a lot of time looking at stats because I try to watch film and make my observations based on film. But the Patriots have played six games. You know how many third down conversions they've given up in six games?
What is it, two? Ten.
That's ridiculous. Ten. And they line up. There's no mystery to what they do from a coverage standpoint. They line up. They play man-to-man. This will be a tough go for the Jets because their receivers are going to have to win and separate versus man. Maybe Darnold's going to have to move around to try to create more time, but it's going to be very difficult to execute against this man-to-man coverage, and they play man-to-man a high, high percentage of the time.
Greg, one more game to ask you about, team to ask you about, at least the Rams. How does Jalen Ramsey help solve their issues after, you know, their recent struggles? They come east to play the Falcons on Sunday. Is Jalen Ramsey the answer for them?
Well, I think if he plays offensive guard or center, he would be.
Right. Their problems are on offense, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're having some offensive issues. I think defensively, they've been up and down. I'm going to be very interested to see what Wade Phillips does because he's been a predominant zone coach this year. They play a lot of zone coverage. Of course, the Jaguars did too. I think Ramsey has ideal traits to play man-to-man, but the Jaguars didn't ask him to play a ton of man-to-man either. So we'll see, because don't forget, when you play man, it's not just Jalen Ramsey. There's other players that have to play man-to-man as well. And now their corner opposite Ramsey is Troy Hill, and their slot is Nicole Roby Coleman, and they have to line up and play man as well. So Wade Phillips and the defensive staff have to decide if, hey, man is our best approach for everyone in the secondary, or if it's not, then we're still probably going to play some zone.
Going to be interesting. Hey, Greg, thanks for this. We'll look for you this weekend and talk to you again next Friday. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
There he is, Greg Cosell on One Bills Live earlier today. Some stuff he said about Singletary is what I'm excited about this week. That's the player I'm most excited to see. That outside zone scheme that they really haven't been able to run as much because he's been out. That's it might be a minor part of their offense, but it's a part of their offense that they haven't really had. He's the dynamic running back on the team. The most dynamic player, maybe outside of John Brown. And they won't need him against Miami, but they're going to need him, I think, later in the season. And to start to get him back into the mix here is nice. He missed a month. You know, soft tissue injuries that can happen like that. Dolphins, Eagles, Redskins, Browns. Dolphins. Four wins? Would you take four? I think you should. They might. They'll probably be favored, I think, in every game. I told you last night, earlier in the show, or whenever, that the Bills are a one-point favorite over the Eagles right now. Obviously, there's the Dolphins game to go, and then there's Sunday Night Football, Eagles, and Cowboys. But if that game's tomorrow, the Bills are a one-point favorite. And I'm really interested to see what that Cleveland game will be. A couple weeks away, but they'll only have one game in between then because the Browns are on bye. Man, the Bills could be favored in Cleveland. And who would have guessed that going into the year? I wouldn't have. I was one of the bigger Brown believers. I still think the Browns are... I still like them to make the playoffs. I do. I know they're two games back of Baltimore, but I think they're better than Baltimore. Baltimore's not beat anybody. And Cleveland, you could say, hasn't beat anybody either, but they have one good win, Baltimore. So, and it's not just like they beat the Ravens. They handily beat the Ravens. They were the better team from beginning to end. So, I still think Cleveland could be the Bills' wild card opponent. That could be a Bills playoff game at Cleveland to start the playoffs, start the postseason. And they'll play them in a couple weeks. The Eagles got weird things going on right now. There's another anonymous Eagles player that is talking bad about the organization. Over the summer, it was about Carson Wentz. Now it's about Howie Roseman and his not making the Jalen Ramsey trade, which you just heard Cosell talking about there. All these teams they play that were supposed to be good. Influx. Injuries. They don't play the Chiefs, but even the Chiefs now. Look around the AFC. Let's just, for the next month, while Mahomes is probably out, who scares you in this conference? It's just New England. That's it. So, this team missing the playoffs more and more seems like a very unlikely thing to happen. And part of it is, honestly, the Bills have been healthy, especially at quarterback. Allen almost missed that Tennessee game, but half the league has lost a quarterback, it seems like. In fact, I think the number is like 11. Something like that. There's been 11 quarterback changes, 13 quarterback changes, something like that. There have been so many different quarterbacks. And just the Bills getting a healthy starter for five games, that alone would have you in the conversation. But then throw in how good that defense is and how much better they are on offense. And by the way, they've been healthy other places. They missed Singletary. I really do think they missed Singletary, even though Gore played really well. But past that, it's just Tyler Kroft. Who else have they really truly had injured who you've missed? Their offensive line's been mostly healthy. Insecki's been banged up. The receivers have been healthy. The defense has been healthy. Health for the Bills has even been a big thing. And that's kind of lucky. or I guess the other teams are unlucky. But, hey, take what you can get. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. We'll get a little bit more into Bills and Dolphins after this on WGR.
Job or if it's impacting you in some type of way, holding you back, just got to communicate that. We've done a good job with his rehab plan, getting on the same page and just communicating. And hopefully once I show everyone that that I'm good to go in practice this week, that they'll let me roll and not look back.
Mitch Trubisky. He's one of those quarterbacks that's been injured. Although, that's on the NFC side. He is supposed to be back for the Bears this week. So, does that really change them much anyway? I don't like Trubisky at all. What a bad pick that's looking like. I mean, the Bears not only took him, they moved up a spot and spent, like, what, a second-round pick to do it? To get him over Mahomes or Watson, who are both easily better. Mahomes might be better with his left arm than Trubisky is. Whew. I'm kind of happy, by the way, the Bills didn't take a quarterback that year. Because I'm worried they would have went up and tried to get Trubisky. That's the guy that everyone said they liked, right? We had, who was it? Someone from the Draft Network on a couple times before that draft that said the Bills really liked Trubisky. And a couple other people said that too. And man, like, it's not even close. Like, the other two guys are maybe the best two quarterbacks in football. And Trubisky's like a game manager at best right now. Is that fair to say? He looks like Alex Smith to me as a player. Is Alex Smith always going to be the example of that? Does he deserve that? Because he was pretty good. But, you know, you take care of the football and you can't really throw your team into a game and or back into a game, then I think maybe he does deserve it. I don't know. Mahomes goes down with an injury yesterday. He's out at least 3 weeks. It's going to be maybe about a month for him. Kansas City is now 5-2 after they beat Denver yesterday. Again, I don't think Denver's, I think they're a non-factor, not a threat at all. There's a some rumors again that they're looking to for a fire sale again, sell off their veteran players. Makes sense. Flacco's terrible. Just nothing going on there that I like. I don't like any part about them. I don't think their defense is that great. It's good. It's not great. It's not the Bills. I don't think their running game is all that great. Their offensive line's not helping out with that. I like their running backs, but they just don't have a good running game. They can't throw the football, mostly because of their quarterback, because they've got some good weapons. Sutton is a great receiver. Cortland Sutton, I think he's really good. Sanders is really good. Emmanuel Sanders. Even Deshaun Hamilton's not bad. So, not a lot that I like about them. They're a non-factor. But here's Kansas City. 5-2. They're missing Mahomes now for a few games, and Matt Moore is going to be their quarterback. What are the Chiefs with Matt Moore? Because to me, I think they should be bad. Right? That is that not the team more than anybody in football that is not built to lose their quarterback? Their whole team is Mahomes. They don't have a good defense. They don't have a strong running game. And I know their skilled players are tremendous when everybody's healthy. But how is that going to help you if your guy can't get him the football? I think they'll be okay. But maybe we start thinking about the Chiefs taking a back seat. But the thing about that is I don't know who takes their spot. Oakland's the closest at 3-2. I just can't see that. I can't get on board with Oakland getting near there. And the Chargers would be the team I would tell you could do it, but they're losing to Devlin Hodges. They're losing to a guy named Duck. They're losing to Duck Hodges on Sunday Night Football. And here's the Chiefs' next couple games. Packers, Vikings, I would pick them right now to lose both those games. Without Mahomes, for sure, I would pick them to lose those games, even though they're home. That would bring them to 5-4. Then they have the Titans on the road with Tannehill at that point. I mean, that's a losable game. I might pick them to win that game, but man, with Matt Moore, though, I don't know. With Matt Moore, everything could change. Maybe not. Titans is not a gimme. Then they have to go to the Chargers, which basically is home to play the Chargers, seeing their stadium lately. And then the Raiders and the Patriots. So it's not super difficult. It's pretty soft in the middle there. But that's six games, and Mahomes is out for at least three. He could miss six. I would maybe guess the way it sounds and reads right now that he's back for that New England game, but that's five games. What are they in those five games? Are they 2-3? Are they 1-4? Because if they're 1-4 and then they go to play New England at Foxborough, by the way, suddenly the Chiefs aren't unbeatable either. And maybe that's a playoff spot that's at least in question for the time being. I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs, don't get me wrong, but everybody's weaker in the AFC right now. It's amazing how that has changed from what I thought it was before the season. I thought this conference was strong going into the year. I really, really did. There was reason to believe that almost every team in the conference could be good. The only teams I thought could not be good were Miami, Oakland, Denver. And that's about it. I even thought Cincinnati had a shot, you know, because they'd done it a couple years ago. And Dalton's respectable. The defense isn't terrible. Like, I thought they could do it. Didn't think it was likely. So everybody else, like the Browns had all these high expectations and the Ravens with Lamar Jackson, and they've kind of met that, but they haven't really beat anybody. The Jaguars having that defense that almost took you to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, a lot of it's the same. They had a down year last year. Maybe they'll come back up, and now your quarterback is way better. Foles, I mean, he might not get his starting job back, but he's certainly better than Blake Bortles was. So that was, the Jaguars looked better. The Titans are the Titans, 3 straight 9-7 seasons. I didn't like them at all, but there was reason to believe they could be that again. Houston with Watson is really good. Then you had the Chiefs, of course, and the Chargers, who were just super talented. Super talented. They could just avoid the injury bug. That's a great team. The Jets with Darnold could be pretty good. I still think they're pretty good. The Bills, of course, same thing. Pretty good. Am I missing anybody? Pittsburgh with Roethlisberger. They're Pittsburgh with Roethlisberger. Like, that's not a gimme, ever. All these teams that you thought would be really good, and then boom, Foles goes down, and then boom, Roethlisberger goes down. I didn't even mention the Colts, by the way, who I had in the Super Bowl winning the AFC. They lose Luck to retirement. No one saw that coming. So that changed. He leaves. Darnold goes down with mono. And now Mahomes goes down. And is there another one? Mariota is worse than I even thought. Just can't even throw the football. Tannehill's their starting quarterback. It's crazy what's happened in this conference. And the Bills, to their credit, because, you know, there have been some close games. And there have been some easy opponents. But they've gotten the job done enough to where, like, they've been the team more than anybody, maybe, the Bills have been, that have taken advantage of the rest of the conference being bad and their schedule being easy. They could so easily be 5-0 right now. I know they could also be, really, they could be 1-3, 1-4. They really could. If some kickers didn't blow it for their teams, the Bills would easily be 2-3. And here's another quarterback that goes down, and it's the best one in football. On a just a football fan level, though, that really sucks. I hate it, because guess what that does? Sunday Night Football next week now? Sucks. Rodgers and the Packers, who look really good to me, it's at Kansas City, but they're playing Matt Moore and the Chiefs. That's going to be a slaughter. Come on. There's no way the Chiefs are winning that football game. There's no way. That's Sunday Night Football. Matt Moore is Sunday Night Football. The Bills really should get flexed into some games here at some point, because the primetime schedule with all of these backup quarterbacks around the league. Do we have to watch Devlin Hodges again? Is he on the, are the Steelers on the primetime schedule again? I would bet they are. I'm going to look up the primetime schedule real quick, because there's got to be some duds coming up. With all of these quarterbacks being hurt. I didn't even mention some of the guys that are missing in the NFC. And here's the Bills looking really good. Josh Allen is a respectable quarterback so far, for sure. And they're just sitting there pretty. Hey, give them the games. There's no way to me they don't get that that Saturday night game against New England. Be stunned by that. Let's see. Week 8 next week. Washington at Minnesota is Thursday Night Football. Ugh. Green Bay, Kansas City. No thanks. Miami, Pittsburgh. That's the worst. I didn't know any of those games. I just read all of those for the first time. That is, maybe this is recency bias. That's got to be the worst primetime schedule I've ever seen in my life. Are you kidding me? The quarterbacks playing in primetime football next week are, it's amazing. Get the Bills in now. I don't care. When do you have to wait to flex? Like week 11? Screw that. Get them in right now. Case Keenum or Colt McCoy, because Keenum's been hurt. Who knows? Doesn't really matter. Kirk Cousins, who's kind of a joke. I know he did a great game last week, but come on. Rodgers, that's great. Matt Moore, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Duck Hodges. Maybe Mason Rudolph's back. Okay, but still, come on. That is brutal. It's brutal. Then it does get better after that. Week 9, 49ers, Cardinals. It's not bad. I like that. The Cardinals are interesting to me. Patriots at Ravens is good. That's Sunday Night Football in Week 9. Cowboys at Giants. Could do worse. Giants are one game out of the division, I think, for now. Week 10, Chargers at Raiders. It's not terrible. Vikings at Cowboys. Not terrible either. Seahawks, Niners. All right, look at Week 10 getting the job done. That's not a bad primetime schedule like there. I'm liking that. Week 10. I'll give that an A- for sure. Week 11, Steelers at Browns. I'm just going to keep grading these. Why not? Let's just go through the primetime schedule. I want to pick out some games here the Bills should get in. I don't even care who the Bills play. I probably should care who the Bills play, probably. They have a Miami game coming up. Miami, you're not putting an extra game on there. You're not flexing Washington in, that's for sure. Maybe this is the time to start thinking about flexing the Bills into some Sunday Night Football games. They deserve it, don't they? Week 11. Steelers at Browns, Thursday Night Football. There he is again, though. The Steelers, but these primetime games, Mason Rudolph. I don't know about you guys out there, but I don't want to watch Mason Rudolph play. He's not interesting to me. He doesn't throw the ball past 5 yards. Like, they basically run a wildcat offense. It's all short, super short. Bears at Rams is good. Or at least, ideally. Week 11, Chiefs, Chargers. That could be good if Mahomes is back, but I'm not sure he will be. That's in Mexico City, by the way. I bet the NFL would really like Mahomes back for that. Week 12, Colts at Texans. You're not flexing that out. That's a good game. It's a very good game. Especially for Thursday night. Seahawks at Eagles, Sunday Night Football. That's good. Ravens at Rams. That's an A+ primetime week right there. Colts at Texans is great. Seahawks Eagles is really good. And I think Ravens at Rams is great. That's Monday Night Football that week. Week 13, Saints at Falcons. Nah, even though the Falcons stink. Patriots Texans is good. Vikings Seahawks is good. That's a couple good weeks in a row there for the NFL. Cowboys-Bears is week 14, Thursday night. Seahawks-Rams is Sunday night, week 14. Then you got Giants-Eagles. Again, I don't think you're flexing out any of the Bills, any games for the Bills there. The Bills have who that week? Baltimore? Yep, Baltimore. Bills-Baltimore would be good. That's going to sting, I think, because that's maybe the most appealing Bills game left to flex into prime time. And I don't see one of those games getting flexed out. Those are all good games. You're not taking Cowboys-Bears. You're not taking Seahawks-Rams. I mean, I guess if the Eagles collapse, can you even flex out Monday Night Football? I should know the flex rules better. Whatever. Week 15. Jets at Ravens. It's pretty good. I like that. I like the Jets. I think they're going to be interesting the rest of the year. Vikings-Chargers isn't bad. Colts-Saints. Again, that's good. Maybe it's just the next couple weeks that really stink. Week 16, that's the week the Bills and Patriots might play on Saturday, so you don't need to worry about that. And then week 17 doesn't have one. Bills-Jets, could that get flexed into primetime week 17? I guess it could. The Jets would really have to go on a run here, though. And I think they could. Their schedule is really light coming up. It's easier than the Bills' schedule in the next month. So it could happen, but the Jets would have to really make a run. Like, what would they have? They'd have to be playing for something. And the Bills would maybe even have to be playing for something. Like, if the Bills locked up a playoff spot by then, which I think you'd hope happens at this point, I don't think you're getting Sunday Night Football. Or you're not getting a primetime game that week 17. So, it'd almost have to be, like, Jets-Bills for a playoff spot. And I don't think that's not really that realistic. And I think we'd all be we'd be on edge if that happened. I mean, it'd be cool to have a primetime game for a playoff spot, but that team is three games behind you right now. So if that's what it takes for the Bills to get a home primetime game, no thanks. I don't need one. So yeah, the next couple weeks, though, that's it. Next week is just awful. Just awful. Keenum, Cousins, Matt Moore, Fitzpatrick, and Rudolph are the primetime quarterbacks next week. What a world we live in. 803-0550 is the phone number. Last call in the nightcap after this. I'll give you a quick update on the Yankees and Astros, and one more quick word on Bills and Dolphins before we get into the weekend here on WGR.
Well, I think we've been able to move the ball and then play well at critical moments of the game overall. And then where I think we have to continue to grow is the continuity piece, which leads to scoring points, hopefully. That's one of the areas that we need to continue to grow in is time on task together. We're a little bit defensively ahead of where we are offensively just from the continuity piece, which again, leads to execution and understanding and playing fast and playing productive football.
Sean McDermott out with Howard and Jeremy this morning. You can catch that on demand at WGR550.com, the radio.com app. Try out our new radio.com rewind. I've been playing around with it the last couple days. It's a really cool feature. It's really user-friendly, too. I think it's a really cool feature. So check that out on the app. Bills-Dolphins 17-point spread on Sunday. I look forward to that. Little preview of the show tomorrow. It'll be myself, Joe DiBiase, and Lou DiBiase, my brother, on Sports Talk Saturday tomorrow. Then I'll be back for Sunday pregame with Nate Geary. Shelby Waddle tomorrow. Wife of Lee Adrian Waddle, who's on IR for the Bills. That'll be one of our couple of guests. So I'll talk to you then. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And not a lot of nightcaps next week because we got a lot of Sabres action and we got the World Series and stuff. Yankees up 4-1 still on the Astros, bottom of the fifth. This has been the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase. I will talk to you tomorrow. Everyone have a good night.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.